Even the dead. Home. Shane broke the silence.
So Caroline is having trouble accepting Joe's death.
She's having trouble accepting both deaths, Maya said.
And she thinks the man who is investigating Joe's murder is being paid off by her family.
That was when it hit Maya so hard, she almost fell over. Oh no.
What?
Maya swallowed. She tried to think it through, tried to organize her thoughts. The boat. The captain's wheel. The fishing trophies. Semper paratus, she said.
What?
Maya met Shane's eye. Semper paratus.
It's Latin, Shane said. It means always ready.
You know it? The boat. The fishing trophies. The captain's wheel and life preservers. But mostly, the crossed anchors. Maya had assumed the crossed anchors meant the Navy. They often do. But someone else uses crossed anchors to award their bosun's mates. Shane nodded.
It's the motto of the Coast Guard.
The Coast Guard. The branch of the armed forces with jurisdiction in both international and domestic waters. The Coast Guard could claim jurisdiction in any death on the high seas.
Maya?
She turned to him. I need another favor, Shane. He said nothing. I need you to find out who the lead investigator was in the maritime death of Andrew Burkett, she said. I need you to see if it was a Coast Guard officer named Tom Douglas. Chapter 17. Putting Lily to sleep was usually a routine task. Maya had heard all the horror stories about little kids who made bedtime a nightmare. Not Lily. It was as though she'd had enough of the day and was ready to just put it behind her. Her head hit the pillow without argument and poof, sleep. But tonight, after Maya tucked her into bed, Lily said,
Story.
Maya was exhausted, but wasn't this one of the joys of motherhood? Sure, sweetie. What would you like to read? Lily pointed to a Debbie Gliori book. Maya read it to her, hoping it would work like hypnosis or a boring coworker, and Lily's eyes would get droopy before closing for the night. But the book was having the opposite of the intended effect. Maya was the one drifting off while Lily poked her to stay awake. Maya managed to finish the story. She closed the book, started to rise, and Lily said,
Again. Again.
I think it's time to go to sleep, sweetie. Lily started crying.
Scared.
Maya knew that you weren't supposed to let your child stay in your room during moments like this. But what those parental instructional manuals forget is that all human beings, even parents, will take the easier way out when exhausted. This little girl had lost her father. She was too young to get that, of course, but there still had to be something there, some subconscious pang, some primitive knowledge that all was not right. Maya scooped Lily up. Come on, you can sleep with me. She carried Lily and gently set her down on Joe's side of the bed. She laid out pillows along the edge of the bed in a makeshift rail, and then to be on the safe side, threw a bunch more on the floor in case Lily somehow rolled through this tenuous barricade. Maya pulled the covers up and tucked them under Lily's chin, and as she did, Maya had one of those sudden pow moments sneak up on her, the one all parents experience, when you are simply overwhelmed by your love for your child, when you are awestruck and you can feel something rising inside of you and you just want to hold on to it, and yet at the same time, that caring, that fear of losing this person scares you into near paralysis. How, you wonder, will you ever relax again, knowing how unsafe the world is? Lily closed her eyes and fell asleep. Maya stayed there, unmoving, watching her daughter's little face, making sure the breaths were deep and even. She stayed that way until, mercifully, her mobile phone rang and broke the spell. She hoped that it might be Shane with an answer on Tom Douglas, though he'd told her that he wouldn't be able to look into the man's military records until the morning. She grabbed the phone and saw her niece Alexa's name pop up. In a small panic, Here, too, was another person she could never lose. Maya quickly hit the green button. Everything okay?
Yeah,
Alexa said.
Why wouldn't it be?
No reason. Man, Maya needed to calm the hell down. What's up, kiddo? You need help with your homework?
Right. And if I did, you think I'd call you?
Maya laughed. Good point.
Tomorrow is soccer day.
Excuse me?
It's the lame thing we do in our town, where all the grades have a game and they sell booster stuff, and there's a moon bounce and a carnival and all that. I mean, it's fun for the little kids.
Okay.
I know you said you were busy, but I was hoping you and Lily could come.
Oh.
Dad and Daniel will be there, too. His game is at 10, mine's at 11. We can take Lily around, get her a balloon animal. Mr. Ronkowitz, my English teacher, makes them for all the little kids. Take her on the rides. I thought it might be fun. We miss her.
Maya looked over at Lily sleeping next to her. The overwhelmed feeling returned in force.
Aunt Maya?
Alexa and Daniel were Lily's cousins. Lily adored them. Maya wanted them, needed them, to be a big part of Lily's life. I'm glad Lily's already asleep, Maya said to Alexa.
Huh?
Because if I told her she was going to see her cousins tomorrow, she would be too excited to go anywhere near her bed. Alexa laughed.
Great. See you in the morning? It's at the town circle.
Right.
Oh, and just FYI, my stupid coach will be there.
No worries. I think the two of us get each other now.
Good night, Aunt Maya.
Good night, Alexa. The night was bad. The sounds began their assault when Maya was in that gentle cusp between consciousness and sleep. The clamoring, the screams, the rotors, and the gunfire were relentless. They would not pause. They would not let up. They grew louder and stayed. Maya wasn't in her bed. She wasn't back there either. She was in this in-between world, suspended, lost. All was darkness and noise, unceasing, endless noise, the type of noise that seemed to come from within her, as though some small creature had climbed inside her head and started screeching and scratching from within. There was no escape, no rational thought. There was no here or now, no yesterday or tomorrow. That would all come later. Right now, there was nothing but the agony of the sounds shredding through her brain like a reaper's scythe. Maya put her hands on either side of her head and pushed hard as though trying to crush her own skull. It was that bad. It was the type of bad that made you want to do anything to please, oh God, please, make it stop. It made you think about picking up a gun and silencing the sounds. If you knew where you were, if you knew that you were so close to your bedside table where you kept a gun in that small safe. Maya didn't know if it lasted minutes or hours. It seemed endless. Time had no meaning when the sounds suffocated you. You just rode it out and tried to stay afloat. But at some point, a new sound, a more regular sound, penetrated her auditory hell. The sound seemed to come from a great distance. The sound seemed to take a long time to reach her and register. It had to fight through the other deafening sounds, one of which Maya realized as she started to float up toward consciousness was her own self screaming. A doorbell. Then a voice.
Maya? Maya?
Shane. He started banging against the door.
Maya?
She opened her eyes. The sounds didn't flee so much as mockingly fade away, reminding her that they might grow quiet, but they were always there, always with her. Maya again thought about that theory that no sound dies, that if you scream in the woods and you hear an echo, that echo just grows fainter and fainter, but never completely goes away. Her sounds did the same. They never fully left her. Maya looked to her right, to where Lily had been sleeping. But she wasn't there. Maya's heart leapt into her throat. Lily? The knocking and doorbell had stopped. Maya bolted upright. She swung her legs out of bed. When she tried to stand, the head rush knocked her back into a seating position. Lily? She called again. From downstairs, Maya heard the door open.
Maya?
It was Shane, inside the house now. She'd given him a key for emergencies.
Up here!
Maya tried again, making it to a standing position this time.
Lily? I can't find Lily!
The house shook as Shane ran up the stairs, two at a time.
Lily?
I got her, Shane said.
He appeared at her door, carrying Lily with his right arm. Relief flooded Maya's veins.
She was at the top of the stairs, Shane said.
There were tears on Lily's face. Maya hurried over to her. Lily cringed for a moment, and Maya realized that her daughter had probably woken up to her mother's screams. Maya slowed down and made herself smile.
It's okay, sweetie.
The little girl buried her face into Shane's shoulder.
I'm sorry, Lily. Mommy had a nightmare.
Lily wrapped her arms around Shane's neck. Shane looked toward Maya, not even trying to hide the pity and concern on his face. Maya's heart crumbled into a million pieces.
I tried to call, he said. When you didn't answer,
Maya nodded.
Hey,
Shane said too cheerfully. He wasn't good with cheerful. Even Lily could sense that his tone was off.
Let's all go downstairs and have breakfast. What do you say?
Lily looked wary, but she was also recovering quickly. That was the thing about kids. They are ridiculously resilient. They have, Maya thought, the coping skills of the best soldiers.
Oh, guess what?
Maya said. Lily looked at her mother warily.
Today? We're going to a carnival with Daniel and Alexa.
That made the little girl's eyes widen.
There'll be rides and balloons?
Maya kept talking about the wonders of soccer day, and in a matter of minutes, the storm of last night dissipated in the glow of a new day. For Lily, at least. But for Maya, the grip of fear, especially because it had obviously touched her daughter, held on to her for far too long. What had she done? Shane didn't ask her if she was okay. He knew. Once they had Lily settled in front of her breakfast and moved out of her earshot, Shane said,
How bad?
I'm fine.
Shane just turned away.
What?
Lying to me gets easier and easier for you.
He was right.
Very bad, she said. Happy now?
Shane turned back to her. He wanted to hug her, she could see that. But they didn't do that. Too bad. She could have used it.
You need to talk to someone, Shane said. What about Wu?
Wu was the shrink from the VA.
I'll call him.
When?
When this is over.
When what is over?
She didn't answer.
It's not just about you anymore, Maya.
Meaning?
He looked over at Lily.
Low blow, Shane.
Too bad. You have a daughter you're raising on your own now.
I'll take care of it.
Maya checked the time. 9:15. She tried to remember the last time that had happened, when she had slept past 4:58 a.m., but she couldn't. She also wondered about Lily.
So what had gone on?
Had her daughter woken up and listened to her mother scream? Had Lily tried to wake her? Or did she just cower in fear?
What kind of mother was she?
Death follows you, Maya.
I'll take care of it, she said again. I just need to see this through.
And by see this through, you mean find out who killed Joe?
She didn't reply.
You were right, by the way,
Shane said.
About?
That's why I'm here. You asked me to look into Tom Douglas's time in the Coast Guard.
And?
He served 14 years. That's where he got his first taste of law enforcement. And yes, he was the officer in charge of the investigation into the death of Andrew Burkett.
Boom. It made sense.
It made no sense. Do you know what his findings were?
Accidental death? According to his report, Andrew Burkett fell overboard at night and drowned. Alcohol was probably involved.
They just stood there for a few moments and let it sink in.
What the hell is going on, Maya?
I don't know, but I plan to find out.
How?
Maya quickly took out her mobile phone and called the Douglas home. There was no answer. Maya left a message. I know why the Burkettes were paying you. Call me. She left her cell phone number and hung up.
How did you find out about Douglas? Shane asked.
It isn't important.
Really?
Shane stood up and started pacing. You didn't have to know him as well as Maya did to realize that this wasn't good.
What?
She said.
I called Detective Kearse this morning.
Maya closed her eyes.
Why would you do that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you threw out a pretty big accusation last night?
It was Caroline's accusation.
Whatever. I wanted to size him up a little.
And?
I like him. I think he's a straight shooter. I think Caroline is full of crap.
Okay, just forget it.
Shane made an annoying buzzing sound, like a game show effect when you give the wrong answer.
What?
Sorry, Maya. Wrong answer.
What are you talking about?
Kearse wouldn't share any information on the actual investigation with me, Shane continued, which is what a good cop, a cop who plays by the rules and doesn't take bribes, would do.
Maya didn't like where this was going.
But,
Shane said, raising a finger in the air,
he felt that it would be okay to let me know about a certain incident that happened in your home recently.
Maya glanced over at Lily. He told you about the nanny cam.
Bingo.
Shane waited for her to explain. She didn't. They both stood there and stared at each other for too long. Shane broke the silence.
Why wouldn't you tell me something like that?
He asked.
I was going to.
But?
But you already think I'm unstable.
Shane made the annoying buzzing noise again.
Wrong. I may think you need help.
Exactly. You're all over me to call Wu. And what would you have thought if I told you I thought I saw my murdered husband on a nanny cam?
I would have listened, Shane said. I would have listened and tried to help you get to the bottom of it.
She knew that he meant it. Shane grabbed a chair, moved it close to her, sat down.
Tell me what happened. Exactly.
No point in hiding it anymore. She told Shane about the nanny cam, about Isabella using pepper spray, about Joe's missing clothes and her visit to the Burkett workers' compound where Isabella lived. When she was finished, Shane said,
I remember that shirt. If you imagined it all, why would it be missing?
Who knows? Shane rose and started for the stairs. Where are you going?
I'm going to check his closet, see if it's there.
She was going to protest, but this was how Shane was. He had to play it all the way through. She waited. He came back 5 minutes later.
Gone,
he said.
Which doesn't mean anything, Maya added. A million reasons a shirt wouldn't be in his closet.
Shane sat back across from her and plucked his lower lip. 5 seconds passed. Then 10.
Let's talk it out for a bit.
Maya just waited.
You remember what General Dempsey said when he visited camp?
Shane asked.
About predictability in the theater?
She nodded. General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had said that of all human endeavors, the one that is most unpredictable is warfare. The only cardinal rule about what happens in battle is that you never know what will happen in battle. You have to be ready for what seems impossible.
So let's play it through, Shane said. Let's say that you really did see Joe on that nanny cam.
He's dead, Shane.
I get that, but just let's go step by step, just as an exercise.
She rolled her eyes for him to get on with it.
Okay, so you look at this nanny cam on what, your TV?
Laptop. You plug in an SD card.
Right, sorry, the SD card. That's the one Isabella took after she sprayed you?
Yes.
Okay, so you put this SD card into your laptop. You see Joe playing with Lily on the couch. Let's eliminate the obvious. It wasn't like an old recording, right?
Right.
Are you sure? You said Eileen gave the nanny cam to you after the funeral. But could someone have put in an old recording or something? A tape someone made of the two of them before Joe was killed?
No. Lily was wearing exactly what she was wearing that day. It was filmed at the exact right angle, taken from that very spot on the shelf and aimed at the couch. There was a trick to it, sure, had to be. Joe was, I don't know, photoshopped or something. But it wasn't an old piece of film.
Okay, so we've eliminated that possibility.
This was getting ridiculous. What possibility?
That it was an old tape. So let's try something else.
Shane started plucking his lip again.
Let's pretend, just for the sake of argument, that it really was Joe. That he's still alive.
Shane held up his hands, even though she hadn't said anything.
I know, but just bear with me, okay?
Maya bit back the sigh and shrugged a suit yourself.
How would you do it?
He asked.
If you were Joe and you wanted to fake your death.
Fake my death and then what, sneak into my house and play with my kid? I don't know, Shane. Why don't you tell me? You obviously have a theory.
Not a theory, exactly, but...
Does it involve zombies?
Maya?
Yes?
You use sarcasm when you're being defensive.
She frowned. Those psych courses, she said. They are really paying off.
I don't know what you're so afraid of here.
I'm afraid of wasting my time. But okay, Shane, forget zombies. Give me your theory. How would you fake your death if you were Joe? Shane kept plucking at his lip. Maya was afraid he might draw blood.
Here is how I might do it, he said. I might hire two street punks. I might give them guns with blanks.
Wow, Maya said.
Just let me finish, but I'll skip the mites if you don't mind. I, Joe, would set it up. I would have blood capsules or something like that so it looks real. Joe was the one who liked that spot in the park, right? He knew the lighting situation. He knew it would be dark enough so you wouldn't see exactly what was going on. Think about it. Do you really believe those two punks just happened to be there? Wasn't that odd to you?
Wait, that's the part you find odd?
That whole robbery angle.
Shane shook his head.
It always felt like nonsense to me.
Maya sat there. Pierce had already proven that the robbery angle was nonsense when the ballistics test told him that the same gun had killed both Joe and Claire. Obviously, Shane didn't know that.
Suppose it was all a setup,
Shane said, warming up to his outlandish conspiracy theory.
Suppose these two punks were hired to fire blanks and make it look like Joe was dead.
Shane?
Yes.
You realize how crazy that sounds, right? He kept plucking that lower lip. The cops were there too, Shane, remember? People saw the body.
Okay, let's take that one at a time. First off, the people who saw the body. Sure, if you were the only witness, it wouldn't be enough. So Joe lies there with the fake blood or whatever, in the dark. A few people see him. It's not like they took his pulse or anything.
Maya shook her head. Are you kidding?
Do you see a problem with my theory?
Where to begin? Maya countered. What about the cops? He spread his hands.
Didn't you yourself tell me that a payoff had been made?
To Kearse, you mean? Your new buddy who you liked and seemed to follow the rules?
I could be wrong about him. Wouldn't be the first time. And maybe Kearse made sure he was on duty when the murder happened. If it was a setup, Joe would know the when and where. So Kearse made sure his name came up in the rotation. Or maybe, I don't know, the Burkettes also paid off the chief or captain or whatever, so Kearse's name came up and he was first on the scene.
You should make one of those YouTube conspiracy tapes, Shane. Was 9/11 an inside job, too?
I'm giving you possibilities, Maya.
So let me get this straight, she said. They were all in on it. The punk kids who Kearse arrested, the cops at the scene, the medical examiner. I mean, if Joe is carted off as dead, there's an autopsy, right?
Hold up.
Shane said. What?
Didn't you say that there was some kind of issue with the death certificate?
A bureaucratic snafu. And stop plucking at your lip, please. Shane almost smiled.
There are holes in what I'm saying. I admit that. I could ask Kearse to see the autopsy photos.
which he won't give you.
I can be pretty resourceful.
Don't be. Oh, and if they went to this much trouble, who's to say they couldn't doctor up some autopsy photos, too?
Good point.
I was being sarcastic. Maya shook her head. He's dead, Shane. Joe is dead.
Or he's messing with you.
Maya mulled that over for a few moments. Or, she said, someone is. Chapter 18. Soccer Day was like something out of a nostalgic American movie that was just a little too perfect, too Norman Rockwell to be authentic. There were tents and booths and games and rides. There were laughs and cheers and referee whistles and music. Food trucks offered up burgers and sausages and ice cream and tacos. You could buy pretty much anything in the town's green and white colors. T-shirts, caps, hoodies, polos, decals, water bottles, coffee mugs, keychains, fold-out chairs. Even the bounce house and inflatable slides were green and white. Every grade had set up their own activity booth. The seventh grade girls applied temporary tattoos. The eighth grade boys had a radar gun and goalie net so you could see the speed of your kicks. The girls' sixth grade had set up a face painting booth. That was where Maya and Lily found Alexa. When Alexa spotted them, she dropped her paintbrush and ran toward them, yelling, "Lily! Hey!" Lily, who had been holding her mother's hand, let go now. She giggled and covered her mouth with her tiny hands and quivered with that level of anticipation and joy that only little children can reach. The quivering and giggles grew as Lily's cousin barreled toward them. The giggles grew into shrieking laughs when Alexa scooped Lily off the ground. Maya stood there, a definite spectator in this greeting, and smiled.
Lily! Aunt Maya!
It was Daniel now hurrying toward them. Eddie trailed behind his son, a smile on his face, too. The scene felt so unreal to Maya, almost obscene in the middle of the personal chaos. But that was okay. The world has lines and fences. More than anything, Maya wanted to keep these three children on the right side of them. Daniel gave his aunt a quick kiss on the cheek on his way to Lily. He took her from his sister and hoisted her high in the air. The sound of Lily's laugh, a sound of pure, undiluted innocence, made Maya pull up. When, she wondered, was the last time she had heard her daughter make a sound like that?
"Can we take her on the rides, Aunt Maya?"
Alexa asked. "We'll be careful," Daniel added. Eddie moved up next to Maya. "Sure," Maya said. "You need some money?"
"We got it,"
Daniel said, and they were off. Maya gave Eddie a quick smile. Her former brother-in-law looked better today, clean-shaven and clear-eyed. He kissed her cheek. No smell of booze. Maya turned her gaze back on the three kids walking away. Daniel had put Lily down between Alexa and himself. Lily held onto Daniel with her right hand, Alexa with her left.
"Beautiful day," Eddie said.
Maya nodded. It was indeed. The sun was shining as though on a director's cue. Here was the American dream, spread out before Maya like a warm blanket, and the overwhelming feeling for her was that she didn't belong here. That her very presence was a dark cloud blocking that glowing light. "Eddie?" His hand cupped his eyes to keep the sun out. He turned toward her. "Claire wasn't cheating on you." His eyes welled up so fast he had to look away. He hunched over, and for a second, Maya worried that he might be crying. She reached out, wanting to put a hand on his shoulder, but she stopped short and let the hand fall to her side.
"You're sure?"
he said. "Yes."
"And that phone?"
"Do you remember my, troubles with that combat tape that got released?"
"Yes, of course."
"There was more to them."
"What do you mean?"
"The guy who leaked it."
"Corey the Whistle?"
Eddie said. "Right. He didn't release the audio." Eddie looked confused. "I think Claire talked him out of it."
"That audio?"
Eddie said.
"It would have made it worse for you?"
"Yes." Eddie nodded, but he didn't ask what was on it.
Claire was so upset when that scandal broke. We all were. We were worried about you.
Claire took it a step further.
How?
She contacted Corey. She hooked up with his organization.
There was no reason to go into Claire's possible motives with Eddie. Maybe Claire worked with Corey as quid pro quo for leaving Maya alone. Maybe Corey, who could be persuasive and charming, had convinced her that helping him take down the Burkett family was the moral and just thing to do. Didn't matter in the end.
Claire started to gather dirt on the Burkettes, she said, to help Corey's organization take them down.
Do you think that's what got her killed?
Maya looked over at her daughter. Alexa's whole team had gathered around Lily to ooh and ah. They were taking turns putting green and white face paint on her, and even at this distance, Maya could feel her daughter's joy. Yes.
I don't understand, Eddie said. Why didn't Claire tell me?
Maya kept her eyes on the children, playing her part as the silent sentinel. She could feel Eddie's gaze, but she kept silent. Claire hadn't told him because she wanted to keep him safe. In doing so, in keeping Eddie completely ignorant, Claire had in all likelihood saved his life. She had loved her husband. She had loved him very much. Jean-Pierre was a stupid fantasy that would have curdled in the light of reality like turned milk. Claire, the loving pragmatist, had seen that, even if Maya, so impetuous with her own love life, couldn't. Claire had loved Eddie. She had loved Daniel and Alexa. She had loved this life with its soccer days and face painting under the bright sun. Do you remember anything unusual, Eddie? Anything that might fit into this?
Like I told you before, she started working later. She was distracted. I would ask her what was wrong, but she didn't want to tell me.
His voice grew soft.
She told me not to worry.
The kids finished the face painting and started toward the carousel. Did she ever mention a man named Tom Douglas? Eddie thought about it.
No. Who is he?
He's a private detective.
Why would she go to him?
Because the Burkettes have been paying him off. Did you ever hear her talk about Andrew Burkett? He frowned.
Joe's brother who drowned?
Yes.
No. What does he have to do with it?
I don't know yet, but I need you to do something.
Name it.
Look at everything again with fresh eyes. Her travel records, her personal files, any place she may have hid things. Whatever. She was trying to take down the Burkettes. She found out that they were paying off this Tom Douglas, and I think that was the catalyst for something bigger. Eddie nodded.
I will.
They both stood there and watched Daniel hoist Lily onto a carousel horse. Daniel stayed on one side, Alexa on the other. Lily beamed.
Look at them,
Eddie said. Just... Maya nodded, afraid to speak. Eddie had said that death followed her, but it probably wasn't that simple. All around her, children and families played and laughed and reveled in the glory of this seemingly ordinary day. They did so without fear or care because they didn't get it. They all played and they all laughed and they felt so damn safe. They didn't see how fragile it all was. War was far away from them, they thought. Not just another continent, but another realm. It couldn't touch them. But they were wrong about that. It had touched one of them already. More specifically, Claire. And Maya was to blame. What she had done in a combat helicopter over Alcom, like those sounds that wouldn't ever leave her, started an echo, a reverberation, and eventually that echo found its way to her sister. The truth was so obvious and so deeply painful. If Maya hadn't made those mistakes in that chopper, Claire would still be alive. She would be standing here, overwhelmed by the beauty and laughter of her children. It was Maya's fault that she wasn't. Claire was not here, and somewhere behind the happy smiles of Daniel and Alexa, was a sadness that would always haunt them. Lily started to spin her head, looking around. She spotted her mother and waved. Maya swallowed and waved back. Daniel and Alexa waved, too, and beckoned for Maya to join them.
Maya?
Eddie said. She said nothing.
Go to them.
Maya shook her head.
You're not on guard duty right now, he said, a little too in her thoughts. Go and enjoy your daughter.
But he didn't get it. She didn't belong here. She was an outsider, out of her element, even though, ironically, this was the way of life she had fought and risked everything to protect. Yes, this, right here, this very moment. Yet she couldn't cross that line and be a part of it. Could she? Maybe that was the deal you made. You can participate, or you can protect, but you really can't do both. Her fellow soldiers would understand. Some might force themselves to cross over. They'd smile and go on the carousel and buy the t-shirts, but there would be something behind the eyes, something that couldn't quite let go, something that kept them scanning the perimeter for approaching danger. Did that ever go away? Maybe. But not yet. So Maya stood there, watching, a silent sentinel. You go, Maya said. Eddie thought about it.
No, I'm good here with you.
They stayed there and watched.
Maya?
She said nothing.
When you find out who killed Claire, you'll need to tell me.
Eddie wanted to be the one to avenge his wife. That wouldn't happen. Okay, she said.
Promise?
What was one more lie? Promise. Her mobile phone buzzed. She checked the number. Tom Douglas's home line. She stepped to the side and brought the phone to her ear. Hello?
I got your message,
Mrs. Douglas said.
Come by as soon as you can.
Let me take Lily home with us, Eddie said. The kids will be thrilled.
It would indeed make things easier. If Maya were to try to pull Lily away from the festivities, she would understandably throw a tantrum worthy of, well, a 2-year-old.
It's about that Tom Douglas, she said, even though he hadn't asked. He lives in Livingston. It shouldn't take more than a couple of hours.
Eddie made a face. What?
Livingston. That's exit 15W on the turnpike, right?
Right, why?
The week before Claire was killed, he said. Her easy pass showed a couple of hits through that toll booth.
Was that unusual for her?
I never really checked her easy pass before, but yeah, I mean, we don't go down that far.
What do you make of it?
There's some fancy mall down there. I figured maybe that's where she went.
Or he didn't want to look too closely, which was understandable. No matter. Maya hurried back to her car. Her sister had been murdered because she was getting too close to a secret. Maya was sure of it. That secret had to do with Tom Douglas and, by extension, Joe's brother, Andrew Burkett. How Andrew Burkett, who'd been dead almost 15 years when Maya and Joe met, could possibly have led to Claire's murder was still a mystery. She started toward the highway, flipping stations, finding nothing she liked. It wouldn't do to overanalyze right now. Her daughter was safe with Claire's family. She hooked up the playlist on her phone via the Bluetooth and tried to clear her mind. Licky Lee came on singing No Rest for the Wicked. Licky sang that she let her good one down, and then the killer line, I let my true love die. Maya sang along, lost in that small bliss, and when the song was over, she hit the back arrow, played it again, sang it all the way through to the also killer end stanza. I had his heart, but I broke it every time. Joe had given her this song. Their relationship had been a mad whirlwind, but that had been Maya's disastrous romantic history.
48 hours after meeting at that charity function, Joe had suggested flying down to Turks and Caicos on the Burkett's private plane. Maya had swooned and acquiesced. They spent the weekend at a villa at the Amanyara Resort. She had expected this new relationship to follow her normal, impetuous pattern. Intense, sizzling, over-the-top, maniacal romantic connection, followed in short order by a quick cut to black. Sizzle to fizzle. Love to goodbye. For Maya, everyone she fell for became her Jean-Pierre. For maybe 3 weeks. So after week one, when she woke up to find that Joe had made her an online playlist, she listened hard to every song, ciphering out hidden meanings in the lyrics, while lying on her back like a teenager and staring at the ceiling. She loved his taste in music. The songs had done more than speak to her. They had penetrated her defenses, weakened her, left her ripe for, sexist as it may sound, education. Still, Maya knew it took two to tango. She had relished whirling helplessly in Joe's vortex, drink, song, travel, sex. But from the start, like with every one of her romantic entanglements, she could see the end in sight. That was okay for her. She had a life in the military. Marriage, kids, soccer days, they were not part of the plan. By all rights, Joe should have ended up being another good memory. Her relationships eventually turned bad, but the memories didn't. Except Maya ended up getting pregnant, and in her ensuing confusion about what to do, Joe stepped up big time. There was the proposal on one knee while violins played. He promised her happiness. He promised her love. He told her that he was proud of her military service and swore to do all he could so that she could achieve her career goals. They would be different, he said, living by their own set of rules. Joe's passion was a force unto itself. It swept her along, and before she knew it, Captain Maya Stern was a Burkett. Licky Lee faded away, and oh wonders, white blood came on. Why on earth, she asked herself, was she listening to Joe's heartbreakers? Simple answer, because she liked the songs. In a vacuum, forgetting where it had all gone, these songs still reached inside her and touched her. Even this one, even with the gut-wrenching opening lines, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. Can't do it alone. Beautiful, but bullshit, Maya thought as she spotted Tom Douglas's boat by the garage. She was ready to do it alone. Before Maya could ring the bell, the front door opened. Mrs. Douglas was there. Her face was drawn, the skin pulled tight. She looked left and right, opened the screen door and said, "Get in." Maya stepped inside. Mrs. Douglas closed the door behind her. "Is someone watching us?" Maya asked.
"I don't know."
"Is your husband home?"
"No."
Maya kept silent. The woman had called her back because she wanted something. Let her say what it was.
"I got your phone message," Mrs. Douglas said.
Maya barely nodded.
"You said you knew what work my husband was doing for the Burkettes."
This time, Mrs. Douglas waited her out. Maya kept it brief. "That's not what I said."
"Oh?"
"I said I knew why the Burkettes were paying your husband."
"I don't see the difference."
"I don't think he did work for them," Maya said, "unless accepting a bribe is work."
"What are you talking about?"
"Mrs. Douglas, stop jerking me around, please." Her eyes went wide.
"I'm not. Please tell me what you learned."
Maya could hear the desperation in the woman's voice. If she was lying, she was pretty good at it. "What did you think your husband was doing for the Burkettes?" Maya asked.
"Tom's a private eye," she said. "I assumed that he was doing confidential private investigation work for a powerful family."
"But he never told you what the work specifically entailed?"
"I told you, his work was confidential."
"Come on, Mrs. Douglas. Are you telling me that your husband would come home from work every day and never tell you anything that went on at the office?" A tear escaped and ran down her cheek.
What was Tom doing?
She asked, her voice a whisper.
Please, tell me.
Again, Maya debated which road to take and settled on the most direct route. Your husband was in the Coast Guard. When he was serving, he investigated the death of a young man named Andrew Burkett.
Yes, I know. That's how Tom met the family. They liked the work he did on that case. So when he opened up his own place, they hired him to do more.
I don't think so, Maya said. I think they wanted him to report the death as an accident.
Why?
That's what I need to ask your husband. Mrs. Douglas sat on the couch as though her knees had given way.
They paid him for so many years. So much money.
Money isn't a problem for the Burkettes.
But that much? That long?
She put a trembling hand to her mouth.
If what you're claiming is true, and I'm not saying it is, then it had to be big.
Maya knelt down. Where is your husband, Mrs. Douglas?
I don't know.
Maya waited.
That's why I called you back. Tom's been missing for 3 weeks.
Chapter 19. Mrs. Douglas had reported her husband missing to the police, but really, when a 57-year-old man goes off without suspicion of foul play, there is little the police can do.
Tom loves to fish, she said. He goes away for weeks at a time. The police saw that. I told them he wouldn't do that without telling me, but...
She gave a helpless shrug.
They put his name in the system, whatever that means. One of the detectives said that they could open a full investigation, but they wouldn't be able to look at his work files without a court order.
Maya left a few minutes later. Enough waiting. She called her former mother-in-law. 3 rings later, Judith said in a low voice,
I'm in with a patient. Is everything okay?
We need to talk. There was a strange pause, and Maya wondered whether Judith was making her excuses and leaving the room.
Meet me at my office. 5 o'clock, okay?
Done. Maya hung up and called Eddie about picking up Lily.
Let her stay, he said. She's having a blast with Alexa.
You sure?
Either you're going to have to let Lily visit a lot more, or I'm going to have to hire an adorable 2-year-old to come by.
Maya smiled. Thanks.
You okay?
I'm good, thanks.
Don't do what she did, Maya.
What's that?
Don't lie to protect me.
He had a point. But then again, where would they be right now if Claire had confided in him? There was a car parked in her driveway. A familiar figure sat on a bench by her back door, taking notes on a yellow legal pad. Maya wondered how long he had been sitting there. More than that, she wondered why he was there now. Was it Shane? Or another coincidence? She pulled up and put the car in park. Ricky Wu didn't look up until Maya was all the way out of the car. He closed his pen with a click and smiled at her. Maya did not smile back.
Hello, Maya.
Hello, Dr. Wu. He didn't like to be called doctor. He was one of those shrinks who really wanted to be on a first-name basis. Maya's father used to play a Steely Dan song from the 70s called Dr. Wu. She always wondered if that was the reason he winced a bit whenever she called him that.
I called and left you messages, Wu said.
Yes, I know.
I thought it might just be better if I stopped by.
Did you now? Maya unlocked the door with her key. She entered. Wu followed her inside.
I thought I might pay my respects, he said.
She made a tisk-tisk noise. I'm surprised.
Pardon?
I didn't think you'd try to renew our patient-shrink relationship with a lie. If Wu was offended, his smile didn't show it.
Can we sit down for a minute?
I'd rather stand.
How are you feeling, Maya?
I'm okay. He nodded.
No recent episodes?
Shane, she thought. He would never buy it if she insisted that they had gone away completely. Some, Maya said.
Want to tell me about them?
I got them under control.
I'm surprised.
What?
Wu arched an eyebrow. I didn't think you'd try to renew our patient-shrink relationship with a lie.
Touché, Maya thought.
Wu tried the gentle smile.
Maya was about to put him off when, without warning, she flashed back to Lily's scared face from that morning. Tears surprised her, stinging her eyes. She turned her back to him and fought them off.
Maya?
She swallowed hard.
I need them to stop.
Wu moved a little closer.
What happened?
I scared my kid.
She told him about the previous night. Wu listened without interrupting. When she finished, he said,
I might want to switch your medication. For patients suffering with similar symptoms, I've been having good success lately with Sirzone.
Maya no longer trusted her voice. She nodded.
I have some in the car, if you'd like.
Thank you.
No problem.
He moved closer.
May I make an observation?
She frowned. So I can't just get the meds and be left alone?
Sorry, Maya. There's always a catch.
Figured that. Okay, what's your observation?
You never admitted you needed help before.
Okay. Good observation.
That's not the observation.
Oh.
You finally admitted it, he said,
to protect your child.
You wouldn't do it for yourself. It had to be for Lily.
Yep. Another good observation, she said.
You're not trying to make yourself better. You're trying to protect your child.
He tilted his head in that shrink way of his.
When do you stop thinking that way?
When do I stop thinking about protecting my child? Maya shrugged. When does any parent?
Touché,
Wu said, putting both palms on the counter.
Glib answer, but touché. But you need to listen to me. The D in PTSD stands for disorder. You can't just tough this out. You want to keep your child safe? Then you need to work through this.
I agree, she said. Wu smiled.
Well, that was easy.
I'll make an appointment.
Why don't we start right now?
I don't have much time.
Oh, this first session won't last long.
She thought about it and again figured why not. It's similar to what I've experienced in the past.
More intense?
Yes.
How often are the episodes coming?
You keep calling them that. Episodes. Except that's a polite word for what they are, isn't it? They are hallucinations.
I don't like that term. I don't like the connotations.
She interrupted him. Can I ask you something?
Of course, Maya.
Spur of the moment decision, but she decided to go with it. Might as well make him useful. I had something else happen to me. Something connected to all this. Wu looked at her and nodded.
Tell me.
My friend bought me a nanny cam, she began. Again, Wu listened without interrupting. She told him the story about seeing Joe on the laptop. Wu managed to keep his face from revealing too much.
Interesting, he said when she was done. This happened during the day, am I correct?
Yes.
So not at night,
he said, more to himself than her. Then, again.
Interesting.
Enough with the interesting. My question is, Maya said, did I hallucinate it, or is it a hoax or something?
Good question.
Ricky Wu sat back down, crossed his leg, even stroked his chin.
The brain is a tricky thing, of course, and in your situation, PTSD, a sister murdered, a husband murdered in front of your eyes, the pressure of being a single parent, ignoring most therapies, the most logical conclusion is that, well, again, I don't like the connotations, but I think most experts would conclude that you imagined or, yes, hallucinated seeing Joe on that computer screen. The simple diagnosis, which is often the best, is that you wanted to see him so badly, you did.
Most experts, Maya said.
Pardon?
You said most experts would conclude. I'm not really interested in most. I'm interested in what you think. Wu smiled.
I'm almost flattered.
She said nothing.
You'd think that I would agree with that diagnosis. You've been ducking me. It would serve you right. You left treatment earlier than I wanted. You then faced added pressures. You miss him. You not only lost the career that defined you, but now you are forced into the role of a single mother.
Ricky?
Yes.
Get to the butt, please.
But you don't suffer from hallucinations. You have vivid flashbacks. That's common with PTSD. Some believe that those vivid flashbacks can be similar or even the same as hallucinations. The danger, then, is that those hallucinations can lead to psychosis. But what you have, be they vivid flashbacks or hallucinations, has always been auditory. At night, when you have your episodes, you never see the dead, do you?
No.
You're not haunted by those faces. The three men. The mother.
He swallowed.
The child.
She said nothing.
You hear the screams. You don't see the faces.
So?
So that's not uncommon. 30 to 40% of combat veterans with PTSD report auditory hallucinations. In your case, it has been exclusively auditory. I'm not saying you didn't,
he made quote marks with his fingers,
see Joe. You may have, but what I am saying is that it isn't consistent with your diagnosis or even the disorder. I can't validate a hypothesis that because of your PTSD, you imagined seeing your husband on a silent videotape.
In short, she said, you don't think I imagined it.
What you call hallucinations, Maya, are flashbacks. They are of things that actually occurred. You don't see or hear things that never happened.
She sat back.
How do you feel right now?
He asked. Relief, I guess.
I can't be certain, of course. At night, are you still on that helicopter?
Yes.
Tell me what you remember.
It's the same, Ricky.
You get the distress call. The soldiers are cornered.
I fly in. I fire.
She wanted to move it along.
We've been through this.
We have. What happens next?
What do you want me to say?
You always stop here. 5 people were killed. Non-combatants. 1 was a mother of 2.
I hate that.
What?
They always say that. 1 was a woman, a mother. It's such sexist crap, isn't it? A civilian is a civilian. The men were fathers. No one ever says that. A mother and a woman. Like that makes it worse than a father and a man.
Semantics, he said.
What?
You get angry at the semantics because you don't want to face the truth.
God, I hate when you talk like this. What truth don't I want to face? He gave her the sympathetic eyes. She hated the sympathetic eyes.
It was a mistake, Maya. That's all. You need to forgive yourself. That guilt haunts you, and sometimes, yes, it manifests itself into those auditory flashbacks.
She crossed her arms. You disappoint me, Dr. Wu.
How so?
It's trite, that's all. I feel guilt about dead civilians, ergo once I stop blaming myself, I'll be all better.
No,
he said.
It's not a cure, but it might make your nights a little easier.
He didn't get it. But then again, he had never heard the audio tape from that day. Would it change things for him? Maybe. Maybe not. Her cell phone buzzed. 1 rang on her phone. She checked the number. Ricky?
Yes.
I have to pick up my kid now, she lied. Can I get those new meds? Chapter 20. The caller ID had read, Leather and Lace. Corey had made it clear. If he called and hung up, that meant he wanted to meet. When she pulled into the lot, the bouncer leaned into her window and said,
Glad you got the job.
Man, she hoped that the bouncer was in on it, and that her being a stripper wasn't viewed as a realistic cover.
Park in the employee lot and use the employee entrance.
Maya did as he asked. When she got out of the car, two of her colleagues smiled and waved. Keeping in character, Maya smiled and waved back. The employee door was locked, so Maya looked up into the camera and waited. She heard the telltale buzz and opened it. Another man was standing there, giving her the cold eye.
"You're armed?"
he asked. "Yes."
"Let me have it."
"No," Maya said. He didn't like that answer, but a voice from behind him said,
"It's okay."
"Lulu."
"Same room as before," Lulu said to her. "He's waiting for you."
"Right to work, then," Maya said in a bad attempt at a half joke. Lulu smiled and shrugged. She could smell the cannabis before she turned the corner and saw Corey lighting up. He took a deep inhale, stood, and offered her a hit. "I'm good," she said. "You wanted to see me?" Corey held the smoke in a bit and nodded. When he released it, he said,
"Take a seat."
Again, she frowned at the upholstery.
"No one uses this room," he said, "but me."
"That's supposed to make me feel better?" She expected a small smile at the very least, but suddenly he was up and pacing, clearly on edge. Maya sat, hoping that might calm him down a bit.
"Did you visit Tom Douglas?"
he asked. "Sort of."
"What do you mean?"
"I visited his wife. Tom Douglas has been missing for 3 weeks." That stopped the pacing.
"Where is he?"
"What part of missing is confusing you, Corey?"
"Jesus."
He took another hit.
"Did you figure out why the Burkettes were paying him?"
"In part." She still didn't know if she trusted him, but then again, what other choice did she have right now? Tom Douglas served in the Coast Guard.
"So?"
"So he investigated the accidental death of Andrew Burkett."
"What the hell are you talking about?"
She filled him in on what she had learned, and what she had already known via Joe about Andrew's death being a suicide. Corey kept nodding, a little too hyped up, and she started to wonder when the mellow would kick in.
"So let's put this together," Corey said, still pacing. "Your sister starts investigating. She stumbles across these Burkett payments to Tom Douglas. Boom, she's tortured and killed. Boom, your husband's killed. Boom, Tom Douglas goes missing. That about right?"
His timeline was slightly off. It wasn't Claire, Joe, Tom. It was Claire, Tom, Joe. But she didn't bother to correct him.
"But there's something else to consider," Maya said.
"How's that?"
"You don't murder someone to hide a son's suicide. You might pay them off, but you don't kill them."
Corey nodded.
"And assuming it was the Burkettes who were making the payments," he added, still nodding with too much vigor, "you certainly don't kill your own son."
His eyes were red, she could see now. From cannabis or tears, she didn't know which. "Corey?"
"Yeah."
"You guys have sources. Good sources. I need you to hack into Tom Douglas's life."
"Did that already."
"You did it weeks ago, looking for clues on his work. But we need everything now. His credit card statements, ATM payments, when he last made a transaction, what his habits are, where he could go. We need to find him. Can you do that?"
"Yeah,"
Corey said.
"We can do that."
He started pacing again. "What else is wrong?" Maya asked.
"I think I have to disappear again. Maybe for a very long time."
"Why?" Corey lowered his voice to a near whisper.
"Something you said last time you were here."
"About?" He looked left, then right.
"I got ways out of here,"
he said.
"Secret ways."
Maya wasn't sure what to make of that. "Okay."
"There's even a hidden door in that wall over there. I can hide, or there's a tunnel to the river. If the cops ever try to surround this place, even quietly or whatever, I can get out. You wouldn't believe the measures I have in place here."
"I can see that, but I don't see why that means you have to disappear."
"A leak,"
Corey shouted, spitting out the word as if it truly disgusted him, which she assumed it did.
You were the one to first raise that, right? You said one possibility was that someone inside my organization leaked Claire's name. I've been thinking hard about it. Suppose my operation... I mean, suppose we're not as airtight as I thought. Do you realize how many people could be exposed? Do you know how many of them would suffer huge, possibly even fatal consequences?
Whoa. Maya needed to calm him down.
I don't think it was a leak, Corey.
Why not?
Because of Joe.
I'm not following.
Claire was killed. Joe was killed. You said that before, that Joe may have been helping her. So there's your leak. Claire told Joe. She may have also told someone else, or Joe might have, or they might have just screwed up when they were investigating.
She didn't care if it was true or not. She just needed him not to disappear on her.
I don't know,
Corey said.
I don't feel safe. She stood and put her hands on his shoulders.
I need your help, Corey.
He wouldn't meet her eye.
Maybe you were right. Maybe we should go to the police, like you said. I give them all the information I have, anonymously. Let them do the rest.
No, Maya said.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Not anymore.
Why not?
There's no way to do that without exposing yourself and your organization.
He frowned and turned back toward her.
You care about my organization?
Not even a little bit, Maya said. But you'll blow our chances if you do that. You'll run. I need you, Corey. We can do this better than the cops.
She stopped.
There's something else, he said. What is it?
I don't trust them.
The cops?
She nodded.
But you trust me?
My sister did.
And it got her killed,
Corey said.
Yeah, it did. But you can't keep going back like that. If you don't get her to become a whistleblower, yep, she's probably still alive. But if I don't kill civilians on that copter, then you don't release that tape, and Claire never even meets you. For that matter, if I chose another career, Claire is probably at home right now playing with her two kids instead of rotting in the ground. Lots of sliding doors, Corey. Waste of time to play it that way.
Corey stepped back and took another deep toke. When he could speak again, he said,
I don't know what to do.
Stay. Look into Tom Douglas. Help me finish this.
And I guess I should just trust you.
You don't have to just trust me, she said. Remember?
He saw it now.
Because I still have something on you.
Maya didn't bother replying. Corey looked at her. She knew that he wanted to ask her about the audio portion of that tape. But she wanted to ask him something about it, too.
Why didn't you release the audio?
She asked.
I told you.
You said my sister talked you out of it.
That's right.
But I'm not completely buying that. It took time for her message to reach you. The story made a splash, but it was starting to die down by then. You'd have been back in the headlines.
You think that's all I care about?
Again, Maya didn't bother replying.
Without headlines, the truth never gets out. Without headlines, we can't recruit more truth tellers.
She didn't need the speech again.
All the more reason to release the audio, Corey. So why didn't you?
He moved toward the couch and sat down.
Because I'm also a human being.
Maya sat down.
Corey lowered his head into his hands for a moment and took a few deep breaths. When he looked up, he was more clear-eyed, calmer, less panicked.
Because I figured that you'd have to live with yourself, Maya, with what you'd done. And sometimes that's punishment enough.
She said nothing.
So how do you live with it, Maya?
If Corey expected a truthful answer to that question, he would have to get in a very long line. For a few moments, they just sat there in silence, the din of the club seemingly miles away. Nothing more to learn here, Maya thought. It was time to go to Judith's office anyway. Maya rose and headed for the door. See what you can find out on Tom Douglas. Chapter 21. Judith's office was located on the ground floor of an apartment building on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, one block from Central Park. Maya had no idea what sort of patients Judith saw nowadays. She was a Stanford University-trained MD, and now a clinical professor on staff at Weill Cornell Medicine, though she didn't teach any classes. That someone who worked part-time could hold these positions was only a surprise to those who didn't recognize the power of the Burkett name and big donations. Shock alert, money means power and gets you stuff. Judith went professionally by her maiden name, Vell. If this was to semi-hide the conflict of the Burkett name, or because that was what many women did, was anyone's guess. Maya headed past the doorman and found Judith's office door. Judith shared her space with two other part-time physicians. All three names, Judith Vell, Angela Warner, and Mary McLeod, were on the door with a long list of letters after them. Maya turned the knob and pushed open the door. The waiting room was empty and small, one love seat, one couch. The artwork was generic enough to work in a roadside chain motel. The walls and carpeting were beige. A sign on the far door read, "In session, please have a seat." There was no receptionist. Maya guessed that the patients were often high profile, and so the fewer people who saw them, the better. One patient would be in session. When finished, that patient would exit into the corridor via a door located in the doctor's office. The waiting patient, or in this case Maya, would then be shown in. Neither patient would see the other. The desire for privacy and discretion was understandable, of course. Maya didn't want anybody knowing about her disorder, either. But it was probably harmful, too. Doctors kept stressing that mental disease was the same as physical disease. Telling someone who was clinically depressed, for example, to shake it off and get out of the house was tantamount to telling a man with two broken legs to sprint across the room. That was all well and good in theory, but in practice, the stigma continued. Maybe, to be more charitable, it was because you could hide a mental disease. Maybe if Maya could hide two broken legs and still somehow walk, she would. Who knew anymore? Right now, she had to get through this and then worry about treatment. The answers were out there, tantalizingly close. No one would be safe until she got to the truth and punished the guilty. She might not be able to do that with broken legs, but she sure as hell could do it with PTSD. Maya checked her watch. 5 minutes until the hour was up. She tried to read whatever inane magazines were there, but the words swam by her. She played with her mobile phone, some game with making words out of four letters, but her concentration was shot. She moved close to the door. She didn't put her ear against it and listen in, but she stood close enough to hear the low murmur of two female voices. Time passed slowly, but eventually Maya could hear the inner door open. The patient was probably exiting. Maya hurried back to her seat, picked up a magazine, crossed her legs. Ms. Casual. The door opened, and a woman Maya guessed was a well-kept 60 smiled at her. Maya Stern? Yes. This way, please. So there was a receptionist, Maya thought. She just worked from inside the office. Maya followed the woman inside, assuming she would find Judith sitting at a desk, or maybe on a chair next to a couch or some such shrink-like environment. But Judith wasn't there. Maya turned to the receptionist. The receptionist stuck out her hand. I'm Mary. Maya got it now. She glanced at the diplomas on the wall. As in Mary McLeod? That's right. I'm a colleague of Judith's. She hoped that maybe we could have a chat. According to the diploma, both women had gone to medical school at Stanford. Maya spotted an undergraduate one for Judith at USC. Mary had gotten her BS from Rice University and did her residency at UCLA. Where is Judith? I don't know. We both only work part-time. We share this office.
Maya did not bother hiding her annoyance. Yes, I read your name on the door.
Why don't you sit for a moment, Maya?
Why don't you pound sand, Mary? If Mary McLeod was flustered by Maya's belligerence, her face didn't show it.
I think I can help you.
You can help me by telling me where Judith is.
I already told you I don't know.
Bye now.
My son served 2 tours. One in Iraq, one in Afghanistan.
Maya couldn't help herself. She hesitated.
Jack misses it. That's the part they never talk about, isn't it? It changed him. He hated it. And yet he wants to go back over. Part of it is guilt. He feels like he left friends over there. Part of it is something else. Something he has trouble articulating.
Mary?
What?
Are you lying about having a son in the military?
I wouldn't do that.
Sure you would.
You're manipulative. You and Judith manipulated me into coming into this office. You manipulated me into this room. You're trying various manipulations to get me to talk to you.
Mary McLeod stood ramrod straight.
I'm not lying about my son.
Maybe not, Maya said.
But either way, you and Judith should both know that without trust, you can't have a doctor-patient relationship. This whole little sham to get me here broke that trust. That's nonsense.
What's nonsense?
That without trust, you can't have a doctor-patient relationship.
Are you serious?
Suppose a loved one, maybe your sister, had shown all the signs of having cancer.
Oh, don't go there.
Why, Maya? What are you afraid of? Suppose that cancer could be cured if you could just get your loved one to a physician. If you and that physician conspired to get her into his office,
it's not the same thing.
Yes, Maya, it is. It is exactly the same thing. You're not getting that, but it is. You need help, just like that cancer patient.
This was a waste of time. Maya wondered whether Mary McLeod was part of all this or if she was being sincere. If Judith had, in fact, manipulated and lied to her old colleague. It didn't matter.
I need to see Judith, Maya said.
I'm sorry, Maya. I can't help you there. Maya headed for the door.
You can't help me at all.
Screw it. Maya dialed the number as she headed back to her car. Judith answered on the second ring.
I hear it didn't go so well with my colleague.
Where are you, Judith?
Farnwood.
Don't go anywhere, Maya said.
I'll be waiting.
She drove in through the service entrance again, hoping maybe to catch Isabella wandering outside or something, but the entire compound appeared empty. Maybe she should break in and poke around, see if she could find a clue as to where Isabella might be hiding, but that was risky, and she didn't have the time. Judith would know how long a ride from New York City to Farnwood would be. The butler answered the door.
Maya could never remember his name. It wasn't something like Jeeves or Carson. It was something ordinary like Bobby or Tim.
Still, as befitted his servant station, Bobby/Tim looked down his nose at her. Without preamble, Maya said, I'm here to see Judith.
Madam is expecting you. He said in some faux British prep school accent. In the parlor.
The parlor was what rich people called a living room. Judith wore a black pantsuit and a strand of pearls that came down almost to her waist. Her earrings were silver hoops, her hair stylishly slicked back. She held a crystal glass in her hand, posed as though she were shooting a magazine cover.
Hello, Maya.
No need for pleasantries. Tell me about Tom Douglas. Her eyes narrowed.
Who?
Tom Douglas.
I don't know that name.
Think hard. She did, or pretended to. After a few seconds passed, Judith shrugged theatrically. He worked in the Coast Guard. He investigated your son's drowning. The glass dropped from Judith's hand, shattering on the floor. Maya did not jump back. Neither did Judith. They just stood there a moment, the glass shards rolling to a stop.
There was a hiss in Judith's voice when she asked, "What the hell are you talking about?" If this was an act.
"Tom Douglas is a private investigator now," Maya said. "Your family has been paying him almost $10,000 a month for years. I would like to know why."
Judith wobbled a bit, like a fighter who was trying to take advantage of the 8 count. The question had staggered her, no question about it. If the stagger came from the fact that she hadn't known about the payoff, or hadn't expected Maya to find out about it, was still anyone's guess.
"Why would I pay off this Tom? What did you say his last name was?"
"Douglas, 2 S's. And you tell me."
"I have no idea. Andrew died in a tragic accident."
"No," Maya said, "that's not how he died. But you know that already, don't you?" Judith's face lost all color. The pain was so clear now, so obvious, that Maya almost looked away. Attack mode was all well and good, but whatever the final truth was, they were talking about the death of this woman's child. Her pain was real and whole and consuming.
"I have no idea what you're talking about," Judith said.
"How did it happen, then?"
"What?"
"How exactly did Andrew fall off the boat?"
"Are you serious? Why would you be bringing that up now, all these years later? You never even knew him."
"It's important." Maya took a step toward her former mother-in-law.
"How did he die, Judith?"
She tried to hold her head up, but the fault lines wouldn't let her.
"Andrew was so young," she said,
trying her best to hold on.
"There was a party on the yacht. He had too much to drink. The sea was rough. He was up on deck alone and fell off."
"No." Judith's voice was a snap.
"What?"
For a split second, Maya thought that Judith was going to leap across the room and attack her. But the moment passed. Judith looked down, and when she spoke again, her voice was soft, almost pleading.
"Maya."
"Yes?"
"Tell me what you know about Andrew's death."
Was Maya being played here? It was hard to tell. Judith looked completely worn out, devastated. Did she really not know about any of this?
"Andrew committed suicide," Maya said. Judith tried very hard not to wince. She shook her head stiffly just once.
"That's not true."
Maya just gave it time, let her move past the rote denial. When Judith did, she asked,
"Who told you that?"
"Joe." Judith shook her head again.
"Why are you paying off Tom Douglas?" Maya asked again.
In war, they call it the 1,000-yard stare, that blank, empty, unfocused gaze when a soldier has simply seen too much. Judith had something like that going on now.
"He was only a boy,"
Judith muttered, and while Maya was the only one in the room, Judith wasn't speaking to her.
"He wasn't even 18 yet."
Maya took a step toward her.
"You really didn't know?"
Judith looked up, startled.
"I don't understand what you're after here."
"The truth."
"What truth? What does this have to do with you anyway? I don't understand why you'd start digging this all up."
"I didn't dig it up. Joe told me."
"Joe told you that Andrew committed suicide?"
"Yes."
"He confided that to you?"
"Yes."
"Yet all these years later, you felt compelled to defy his wishes and tell me."
Judith closed her eyes. "I don't mean to be bringing you pain."
"Right," Judith said with a sad chuckle. "I can see that."
"But I need to know why you'd be paying off the Coast Guard officer who was investigating Andrew's death."
"Why would you need to know that?"
"It's a long story." Judith's chuckle was more pained than any sob.
"Oh, I think I have time, Maya."
"My sister found out about it." Judith frowned.
"She found out about this supposed payoff?"
"Yes." Silence.
And then Claire was murdered, Maya said. And then Joe was murdered.
Judith arched an eyebrow. You're saying they're connected? Claire and Joe?
So Kearse hadn't told her. The same gun killed them both. Maya's words landed like another blow, staggering her back.
That can't be.
Why can't it be? Judith closed her eyes again, summoned some inner strength, opened them.
I need you to slow down and tell me what's going on here, Maya.
It's simple. You're paying off Tom Douglas. I want to know why.
Seems to me, she said, you already figured that out.
Judith's sudden change in demeanor threw her. The suicide? Judith managed a smile.
You wanted to cover up a suicide?
Judith stayed still.
Why?
Maya asked.
Burkett's don't commit suicide, Maya.
Did that make sense?
No, of course not. What was she missing?
Time to change direction, get Judith back off her footing. So why did you pay off Roger Kearse?
Who?
Judith made a face.
Wait, the police officer?
Yes.
Why on earth would we pay him?
We. You tell me.
I assure you I have no idea. Is this something else your sister supposedly uncovered?
No, Maya said. Caroline told me. Another small smile came to Judith's lips.
And you believed her?
Why would she lie?
Caroline wouldn't lie, but she gets confused.
Interesting, Judith.
What?
You paid off two men. Both were investigating the deaths of your sons. Judith shook her head.
This is all a lot of nonsense.
Luckily, we can solve this easily, Maya said. Let's ask Caroline.
Caroline isn't around right now.
So call her. This is the 21st century. Everyone has a mobile phone. Here. Maya held up her phone. I have her number right here.
That won't do any good.
Why not?
Let's just say,
Judith continued, her words coming slower now.
Caroline can't be disturbed.
Maya lowered the phone to her side.
Caroline isn't well. This happens to her. She needs rest.
You put her in a loony bin? Maya had intentionally used the derogatory term to draw blood. It worked. Judith visibly cringed.
That's a horrible way to put it,
Judith said.
You of all people should be sympathetic.
Why of all people? Oh, you mean because of my own issues with PTSD? Judith did not bother replying. So what trauma has Caroline faced?
Not all trauma occurs on the battlefield, Maya.
I know. Some might occur by having two brothers die young and tragically.
Precisely. Those traumas have caused issues to arise.
Issues to arise, Maya repeated. You mean, for example, Caroline thinking her brothers are still alive? Maya had expected that her words would be another blow, but Judith seemed ready this time.
The mind wants, Judith said. The mind can want so badly that it manifests delusions. Conspiracy theories, paranoia, visions. The more desperate you are, the more susceptible. Caroline is immature.
That's her father's fault. He sheltered her and overprotected her. He never let her deal with adversity or stand on her own. So when the strong men in her life started to die, her support system, Caroline could not accept that. So why wouldn't you let her see Joe's body?
She told you that?
Judith shook her head.
None of us saw Joe.
Why not?
You of all people should know why. My son was murdered. He was shot in the face, wasn't he? Who would want to look at that?
Maya considered that and decided once again it didn't fully add up. How about when Andrew was pulled out of the water?
What about that?
Did you see his body?
Why would you ask that?
My God, you can't possibly believe. Just tell me if you saw him.
Judith swallowed hard. Andrew's body had been at sea for more than 24 hours. My husband identified him, but it wasn't easy. The fish had gotten to him. Why would I want to?
She stopped and narrowed her eyes. Her voice was a whisper now.
What are you trying to do here, Maya?
Maya just looked at her. Why are you paying off Tom Douglas? She took her time.
Let's say what Joe told you about Andrew's death was true.
Maya waited.
Let's say that Andrew did commit suicide. I was his mother, and I couldn't see it. I couldn't save Andrew in real life, but maybe I can protect him now. Do you understand?
Maya studied her face. Sure, she said. But she didn't.
Whatever happened to Andrew, whatever he suffered all those years ago, it has nothing to do with today. It has nothing to do with Joe or your sister.
Maya didn't believe that for a moment. And the payoffs to Roger Kearse?
I told you that simply isn't true. Caroline made it up.
There was nothing more to mine here. Not yet, anyway. Maya had to dig more, get more information. She was still missing too many pieces of the puzzle. I better go.
Maya?
She waited.
Caroline isn't the only one who may need rest. She isn't the only one who wants so badly she may start seeing things that aren't there.
Maya nodded. Subtle, Judith.
I wish you'd let Mary or me help you.
I'm fine.
No, you're not. We both know that. We both know the truth, don't we?
What truth is that, Judith?
My boys have been hurt enough,
Judith said with an edge in her voice.
Don't make the mistake of hurting them more.
Chapter 22. Lily was out in the front yard playing some kind of tag game with her Uncle Eddie when Maya turned the corner. Maya slowed the car down and pulled to the curb. For a few moments, she just sat and watched. Alexa came out the front door and joined the festivities, both she and her father faking as though they couldn't quite tag Lily, dramatically falling to the ground when they reached out and missed. And even from that distance, even with Maya's window closed, she could hear Lily's shrieks of laughter. Mawkish to think of it so plainly, but was there any sound as joyful as the undiluted laughter of a child? The irony between the sounds, this one that rang far too rarely in Maya's ears, versus the ones that haunted her nights without mercy, did not escape her. But then again, there was no point in dwelling. She put the car back in drive, forced a smile onto her face, and cruised to the front of Claire and Eddie's house. Maya gave the horn a little honk and waved. Eddie turned, his face flushed from happy exertion, and raised his hand in return. Maya got out of the car. Alexa stood upright, too. Lily didn't like that, Eddie and Alexa ending the game, so she kept tapping them on the leg, daring them to start the chase anew. Alexa came over and gave her aunt a hug. Eddie kissed her on the cheek. Lily crossed her arms and pouted.
I stay,
Lily demanded. We can play tag when we get home, Maya told her. Not surprisingly, this did nothing to appease Lily. Eddie put his hand on Maya's arm.
Do you have a second? I wanted to show you something.
He turned to his daughter.
Alexa, do you mind watching Lily for a few more minutes?
Sure.
That made Lily smile. Maya could hear the laughter start up again as she headed inside with Eddie.
I checked Claire's Easy Pass records, he said. From what I could see, she visited that Douglas guy twice within a week.
That doesn't surprise me, Maya said.
I didn't think it would, but where she went after the second time might.
He had printed out the records. He handed her a sheet and pointed to the first highlighted section.
So a week before the murder, Eddie continued,
Claire travels down to Livingston. See the timestamp?
Maya nodded. 8:46 a.m.
Now, if you follow it, she got on the parkway at 9:33 instead of the turnpike. See the next few lines?
Yes.
She didn't head back home, Eddie said. She traveled south instead. At exit 129, she moved from the parkway back to the New Jersey Turnpike and got off at exit 6.
It was on the bottom of the page. Exit 6, Maya knew, was the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Anything after that? Maya asked.
Right over here. She took Interstate 476 south.
Toward Philadelphia, Maya said.
Or the Philadelphia area, at least,
Eddie said. Maya handed him back the sheets. Any reason Claire would be down there that day?
None.
Maya didn't bother asking him about friends Claire could have visited, or shopping she might have done, or even if she might have suddenly fancied a trip to Independence Hall. Claire hadn't gone there for any of that. Claire had spoken to Tom Douglas. She had learned something from him, and that something had taken her to Philadelphia. Maya closed her eyes.
Not to make a stupid Liberty Bell joke, Eddie said, but is any of this ringing any bells?
Maya had no choice, so she told Eddie yet another lie. No, she said. No bells at all. It rang bells, albeit distant ones. As Caroline had reminded her, when Andrew died, he and Joe had both still been in high school. A boarding school, to be more exact. An upper-crust, old-money prep school called Franklin Biddle Academy, located right outside Philadelphia. Eileen called her on the drive home.
Remember how we used to do Chinese takeout on Wednesday nights?
Of course.
I'm starting up the tradition again. You home?
Just about.
Great,
Eileen said with too much enthusiasm.
I'll get our favorites.
Something wrong?
I'll be there in 20 minutes.
There were too many possibilities spinning through Maya's head. For the first time, she tried to let it go. For just a few moments. Get back to the basics. Know what you know. Most people oversimplify Occam's razor to mean the simplest answer is usually correct. But the real meaning, what the Franciscan friar William of Occam really wanted to emphasize, is that you shouldn't complicate, that you shouldn't stack a theory if a simpler explanation was at the ready. Pare it down. Prune the excess. Andrew was dead. Claire was dead. Joe was dead. But at the same time, she couldn't just dismiss everything else she had learned, could she? Could she just dismiss what her own eyes had seen? Or again, should she accept the simplest answer? And what was the simplest answer? Well, it wasn't pleasant. But for the sake of exercise, strip it down. Be as objective as you can. Then ask yourself, was the person who had seen the video on that nanny cam reliable? Or had she undergone enough stress, strain, and outright trauma to be someone of questionable judgment? Be objective, Maya. It was easy to trust your own eyes, wasn't it? We all did. We weren't crazy. The other guy was. That was part of the human condition. We understand our own perspective too well. So step outside it. The war. No one understood. No one could see her truth. They all thought that Maya was weighed down and guilt-ridden over the death of those civilians. That would make sense. They see it from their perspective. You feel guilty, the theory went, and that manifests itself in the painful flashbacks. You try therapy, you take drugs, death surrounds you. No, check that. Death does more than that. Death follows you, Maya. Was a person like this, a person surrounded by death, a person who had fooled even those closest to her into believing that her condition was based in part on feeling guilty, someone whose judgment you trusted? Stripping away the excess and the complications, could such a person be trusted to look at the facts rationally and learn the truth? Objectively? No.
But then again, screw objectivity, right? Conclusion? Someone was messing with her big time. Judith had been awfully cagey when it came to the whereabouts of Caroline. Maya took out her phone and called her sister-in-law. It went to voicemail, hardly a surprise. When the message beeped, Maya said, "Caroline, I want to make sure you're okay. Please call me the moment you get this." Eileen was parked in the driveway when Maya got home. Maya pulled the car to a stop. Lily had fallen asleep in the back seat. She got out of the car and started to open her back door when Eileen said, "Let her sleep for a second. We need to talk." Maya turned and faced her friend. Eileen had been crying. "What's wrong?"
"I may have messed up," she said. "With that nanny cam?"
Eileen started shaking.
"It's okay," Maya said. "Let me get Lily in the house and we can..."
"No,"
Eileen said.
"We need to talk about it out here."
Maya looked a question at her.
"It may not be safe to talk inside,"
Eileen said, lowering her voice.
"Someone might be listening."
Maya glanced through the